During our six-month investigation, NPR News wanted to get a sense of how much bullying occurs in Minnesota. We found some answers, but were unable to draw a precise picture for the simple reason that there's no effective tracking of bullying incidents. NPR's research, along with a new state analysis of bullying, did confirm that bullying happens in every school district. That analysis found 13% of Minnesota 6th, 9th, and 12th graders are bullied regularly, once a week or more. If that 13% held for the entire state student population, that would mean more than 100,000 students are bullied on a regular basis. State Education Commissioner Brenda Caselia says that speaks to the work that needs to be done.
What's upsetting is that it's still going on. We just have to be sure that we are creating environments for children that are safe and welcoming.
NPR News also reviewed other states' bullying laws. By comparison, Minnesota's state law appears weak. It hasn't been updated since 2007, even though there have been several studies on bullying since that time. Minnesota's law largely leaves districts to figure out bullying for themselves. That's one reason why a group called Bully Police gave Minnesota a C-. Bully Police is a nationwide grassroots group of bullying prevention advocates and researchers who grade state bullying laws. Minnesota's is the lowest grade in the nation, except for the four states with no bullying law. It's impossible to determine how any one district is addressing bullying on any given day, but one measure we can review is the policies each district and charter school is supposed to have in place. So NPR News collected those policies, nearly 500 of them. We found at least 29 districts or charter schools that don't even use the word bullying in their policies. At least a dozen more use the word but don't define bullying. While policies are regarded only as good as the people who implement them, Judy Kaczynski says policies are still important. Kaczynski heads Bully Police, the group that gave Minnesota a C-. She says policies set a tone that shape a school's culture.
And it says that you have to do certain things. You've got something that's more standard and more universal, so it's not so arbitrary.
NPR's research found a majority of districts use a model policy that the Minnesota School Boards Association wrote for them to use. While that group has won praise for the policy, about a quarter of districts and charter schools don't use the model policy. Some districts have very little on the books regarding bullying, and in some cases, just a paragraph. Not that it matters. No one checks on the policies because there's no law requiring it. We shared our findings with Walter Roberts, a professor of counselor education at Minnesota State University Mankato. He researches bullying.
It confirms my concern about the issue of if you give local school districts the option to adopt what they like and not adopt what they don't like, then I'm not sure we're providing all the protection for the kids that we need to.
Bullying can be hard to define. Is it just picking on someone or is it more? Is all shoving bullying? When does something stop being bullying and start being something else, like sexual harassment, for which there are more serious legal consequences? This challenge appears to be a major flaw in Minnesota's state bullying law. There's no definition. At least 35 states define bullying in their laws. Minnesota does not. As one federal official said, that's like having a law that prohibits speeding without setting a speed limit. There is widespread agreement among researchers that bullying includes three elements: repetition, a goal to cause harm, whether physical, verbal, or social, and an imbalance of power that leaves victims unable to defend themselves. So let's look at Minnesota's law. It states, each school board shall adopt a written policy prohibiting intimidation and bullying of any student. The policy shall address intimidation and bullying in all forms, including but not limited to electronic forms and forms involving internet use. That's the only requirement. Every school district must adopt a policy prohibiting bullying and cyberbullying. There's no list of what those individual district policies must include, as is common in other state laws. Since the Department of Education couldn't tell us what was in those policies, we tried to find out on our own, collecting and analyzing the bullying policies of the nearly 500 traditional school districts and charter schools. We believe it's the first time any organization has done this. 19 districts, mostly charter schools, did not respond to our repeated requests for their policy. The other 473 that did respond all do have policies. About three-quarters use that model policy that the Minnesota School Boards Association, or MSBA, developed. One reason MSB exists is to assist school boards, according to lobbyist Kirk Schneiderwind.
Many districts don't have the members or a lawyer on staff or hire a lawyer to craft their own policy. And that's one of the services that we provide.
That model policy does fill in the void in several areas where the state law falls short. The group, for example, does define bullying in the model policy. It also includes a process for reporting and investigating bullying. But districts don't have to enact the MSBA model policy. Some go beyond it, but others fall short, in some cases, far short. At least 15 districts don't have a bullying policy, per se. They include bullying in their harassment policies. The Buffalo Lake Hector Stewart School District's bullying policy is a one-paragraph statement that acknowledges a difference between sexual harassment and bullying, but then refers all cases of bullying to be responded to according to the district's harassment policy. The words bullying and harassment are often used interchangeably, but researchers like Susan Limber with Clemson University say there are important distinctions.
Harassment of protected classes of individuals, in other words, harassment based on one's race or gender, those are concerns with federal law. And I think confusing the terms bullying and harassment can be problematic in schools.
Bullying encompasses more than just protected classes. Limber says bullying and harassment require different sets of consequences. While neither should be tolerated, bullying is often a symptom of issues that might call for counseling in addition to or instead of discipline. Counseling is one tactic the U.S. Department of Education recommended last fall in a letter to states. That letter details what should be included in effective state bullying laws and local policies. The department says policies should have procedures for referring both victims and perpetrators to counseling or mental health services. On this issue, the model policy includes a general requirement to make resources available, but that directive is only aimed at bullying victims, not bullies. And while several policies include procedures on how to discipline a bully, few policies specifically direct schools to notify a family that their child has been bullied. Cyberbullying is another area where both Minnesota state law and the model policy provide minimal guidance. Neither the law nor the model policy use the word cyberbullying, though the model policy does describe actions that constitute cyberbullying. More than 140 districts and charter schools, that's nearly a third of all districts, sent us policies that don't appear to address cyberbullying at all within their bullying policy. Several districts said they were in the process of revising their policies, especially around cyberbullying, and the School Boards Association also updates the model policy as it deems necessary, most recently last fall. The most pervasive form of bullying remains verbal and in person, according to researchers. But bullying can also be physical and include everything from being punched to having the family mailbox blown up. The mailbox incident actually happened to the Kaczynski family in Burnsville. According to her mother, Tina Kaczynski, who died in a car crash in 1998, was repeatedly bullied by classmates. She was popular and pretty, maybe not what you'd think of as a typical victim. It was the other popular and pretty girls who tormented Tina. Judy Kaczynski remembers her daughter's reaction to the bombing.
She threw up and trembled and shook and said, "See how much they hate me? See how much they hate me?"
A growing body of research shows bullying has a negative impact on grades and other facets of life. For some students, bullying might be one of several factors that lead to suicide. That's something the western Minnesota town of Marshall is still dealing with. Last month, two eighth graders at Marshall Middle School hanged themselves during a sleepover, Paige Moravetz and her best friend Haley Fentress. Their families say the girls had been bullied. Haley had moved from Indiana about a year ago, so she was the new girl, getting bullied for her weight and red hair. Both girls were being treated for depression. The girls' parents have stopped giving interviews, saying they're still grieving, but in the days following the suicides, the mothers told NBC's Today Show the nasty comments were mostly electronic. Paige's mom, Trisha Benke, is heard here first, followed by Haley's mom, Tracy.
It was more of the Facebook texting and not, I mean, that's what I got from it.
Yeah, I think so too. And bullying in the traditional sense is different to me than what it is nowadays. You know, Kids are so mean and cruel to each other. The things that they say to each other is just, it's horrible.
Researchers note the link between bullying and suicide is complex. They say there's rarely a single reason why young people take their own lives. When bullying is a factor, it's usually one of many. In Minnesota, state officials say there's been a slight decline over the past decade in the suicide rate for youth aged 10 to 19. In 2009, the last year data are available, 39 people in that age range committed suicide. Yet, if suicide related to bullying is rare, bullying itself is decidedly not. Bullying's prevalence is confirmed by the Minnesota Student Survey. It's given every 3 years to 6th, 9th, and 12th graders throughout the state, including more than 130,000 last year. Students answer questions about everything from smoking to seatbelts to sex to bullying. Bullying was reported in every district. We noted earlier that 13% reported being bullied at least once a week or more. 9% reported being the bullies that often, and 3% reported being both bullies and victims at least once a week. Maren Carter counts herself as both a former victim and bully. She's a sophomore at Park High in Cottage Grove. She says she's been called fat so many times that she once grabbed a bottle of pills.
And I like had them in my hand and I texted my friend. I said, I can't do this anymore. Because I couldn't live anymore. Because I couldn't live with the fact that I couldn't change who I was. And I was prepared to die that night.
Her friend talked her out of it. Yet in her own torment, Carter says she eventually turned to bullying others.
I started picking out the things that were wrong in my friends. And I started saying, well, this is wrong about you, because by making them feel bad about themselves, I felt powerful.
Nancy Riestenberg with the Minnesota Department of Education says a recent analysis of the Minnesota Student Survey data reached an important conclusion. It doesn't matter if you're the bully or the victim. All students involved with bullying are more likely to report other negative associations in life.
The kids who are hurt need support. The kids who have done the hurting need support.
Students involved with bullying, whether as victims, perpetrators, or both, are less likely to report getting A's and B's on report cards. They're twice as likely to be obese as non-bullying involved students. Both victims and perpetrators skip school more often than the average student. And at least a quarter of all students who are somehow involved with bullying have thought about suicide in the past year. Jennifer O'Brien is Adolescent Health Coordinator at the State Department of Health.
I think this is going to provoke us to think differently about the issue, that it's a little bit more nuanced than a sort of black and white issue, bad guy, good guy.
Such findings highlight the need to balance discipline and supportive measures when addressing bullying. In Minnesota, that balance is left largely to districts to determine. Critics say that approach to rely on local control will leave some schools behind and unable to properly address problems when they occur. The approach was born from a process that started in 1999. That's when Georgia became the first state to adopt a bullying law. 3 years later, DFL State Senator Barb Goodwin proposed Minnesota's first bullying law. She was a state representative at the time.
When I brought it up to people and brought up my bill and tried to get a hearing on it, they thought it was very unnecessary. They thought that just kids will be kids and they'll do these kind of things, but nobody gets hurt in the long run.
Goodwin's proposal included a statewide definition of bullying, as well as a list of requirements for all district policies to include. But hers and other proposals didn't pass, even as other states adopted bullying laws. Then, on March 21st, 2005, 16-year-old Jeffrey Weiss killed 9 people, including 7 at Red Lake High School, before he killed himself. In the aftermath, attention was given to the bullying Weiss reportedly endured. Minnesota's first bullying law passed 4 months later, but it wasn't anything like the proposals Goodwin and others had introduced. Instead, it was essentially the law that still exists today, a few sentences requiring districts to have a policy on file. Kirk Schneiderwind with the Minnesota School Boards Association says his group lobbied for a less intrusive law so districts could retain local control to address bullying as they saw fit.
We just made the pitch that we are willing to do this. We understand the importance of this. And rather than having detailed requirements within the state statute, that we felt we could do a good job with that, and we felt like we've done a very good and thorough job in our policy.
In the end, the model policy that MSBA drew up largely mirrored what had been in Goodwin's bill. But Goodwin argues that's still not enough. She says those components should be in the law to guarantee uniformity. DFL State Senator Scott Dibble agrees. His bullying bill recently failed in the Minnesota Senate. It would have required, among other things, districts to post policies online and require the state to check to make sure districts have policies. But Dibble's bill does not include other components that were on that checklist from the U.S. Education Department. There's no definition of bullying or cyberbullying, and it doesn't clarify when schools have to respond to off-campus bullying, cyber or otherwise. Dibble has quarreled with the School Boards Association over whether the state should have more oversight. He calls the MSBA model policy, quote, anemic and worthless.
Because they don't do anything to really propel it out and do anything to put any effort behind encouraging school districts to take a look at it, to adopt it, to train teachers on it, to communicate it. They're not putting any shoe leather into this effort.
The resistance at the state capitol rests in the long-held desire to keep control of Minnesota schools local. Republican Pam Wolf of Spring Lake Park was a teacher for 25 years before becoming a state senator. She says she always felt in her classroom that her school or district had informed her well about how to address bullying.
If I see that there's a lack, then we can proceed with something statewide. But I think it's being handled at the local levels. And I'd be willing to say I'm pretty sure that I've never met a teacher who's okay with seeing one kid pick on another kid, because we love them all.
Critics, though, say a key shortfall to local control is the lack of a method to track data statewide. Minnesota does require schools to report disciplinary incidents, things like fights, vandalism, weapons at schools. Bullying and cyberbullying are included, but only incidents that lead to at least a day's suspension are tracked. That threshold makes the disciplinary reports inadequate for measuring bullying because most bullying is handled with less severe discipline. Both researchers and the federal government say measurable data are crucial to knowing the extent of bullying in your school or state. Massachusetts and New Jersey are among the recent states to require detailed tracking of bullying incidents. New Jersey's schools will have to post on their homepages the number of bullying incidents they've had. One Minnesota district that does track bullying is Forest Lake. It has enjoyed a reduction in bullying by using a program called Olveus. Olveus is a highly regarded bullying prevention program that can claim lower bullying rates where it's used. One reason Olveus can say that is because it requires schools to survey students and collect data, so it is possible to track over time. Carolyn Latati is Forest Lake's family support advocate. She says once schools learned how to use the data, it became an effective tool.
The point of the survey is for the school to use it to address what's happening in their building. And overall, we have seen decreases in bullying. Certainly bullying, kids reporting bullying others, but also being bullied.
Last year, for example, one school, Scandia Elementary, had 17 behavior referrals, down from 39 a few years ago. Senator Dibble's bullying bill that failed in the Minnesota Senate earlier this year also would have required data collection. Opponents of Dibble's bill cite the cost of such data collection, and they could point to this. There's actually no proof that a stronger state law causes bullying to decrease. No one's ever studied that. But Education Commissioner Brenda Caselia says that's no reason not to update the law.
I don't even see why this hasn't been done. I mean, this is just simply protecting our children. Bullying is not a partisan issue. Every single parent in this community wants their kid to be safe. To me, this should have been done a while ago.
And lawmakers in other states have already acted. In Massachusetts, Phoebe Prince killed herself after being repeatedly bullied by a group of students who later faced criminal charges. In New Jersey, college student Tyler Clemente killed himself after discovering a secretly made video of him with another man. Lawmakers beefed up anti-bullying laws in both states. Bills were signed into law by Democratic Governor Deval Patrick in Massachusetts and Republican Governor Chris Christie in New Jersey. David Nash lobbies on behalf of New Jersey school principals. He says the law there is too new to measure any results, but he says he likes the sections regarding data collection and posting online. He does worry the law is too prescriptive in some places. Still,
it's better to have a strong law that's imperfect than to have no standards.
Back in Minnesota, Tammy Auberg of Fridley has become a leading advocate for stronger bullying laws at the district, state, and federal levels. It's a cause she took up after her son Justin killed himself last summer in Andover. After he died, Aberg learned from Justin's friends that he had been bullied for being gay.
His last message on his Facebook that we found was, "If you really knew me, none of you would like me." He probably hated himself and thought that no one would like him, even though he had tons of friends.
Aberg has a new ally in her efforts. Andrew Behnke is a cousin of Paige Moravetz, one of the girls who killed themselves in western Minnesota last month. Behnke says he also wants to work to change policies, especially around cyberbullying.
Bullying policies are so inadequate now and out of date. These kids are getting attacked from all angles when it comes to bullying. So you can't just assume that when the school day ends, all of that trouble is closed for the day.
Those new bullying laws in Massachusetts and New Jersey were signed about 4 months after the high-profile suicides that happened in each state. Last Monday marked 10 months since Justin Aberg's death in Minnesota. Today marks 1 month since Haley Fentress and Paige Moravetz died in western Minnesota. Tom Weber, Minnesota Public Radio News.